Welcome back to the podcast. It's show 115, and we must be doing something right because we've got two or three shows out in fairly quick succession. Just me this week and talking with Doug Robbins, who won the Holger pinhole section of Holger Week back at the end of 2021. So hope you enjoy. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. This is show 115 and we're doing something right because we've got three shows in fairly quick succession. No Corey this week because he, despite me telling him during the week that we were recording today, he seems to have got it muddled up and confused in his little head that it was next week. So he's out of town and I only found that out about 20 minutes ago. So there was no way I was going to cancel. So here we are. You've just got me. My name's Andrew, and we're joined today by Doug Robbins. How are you doing, Doug?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Thanks for having me on today.
That's okay, mate. So Doug, for those who don't know, was the pinhole winner, pinhole category winner for the Holger Week competition. Is that what it is? I guess it is, sort of. Back in October. And we, of course, the Lensless Podcast, Corey and I do the judging. You know, we just look at the pictures and choose the ones that we like. There's nothing much more critical about it than that. Then we have a little vote on it if we don't quite agree, me and him. And there we go. So Doug won this year. You submitted three pictures, and the winning one was all the baby skulls, which was super, super creepy. We'll come to talk about that in a moment. But the chatter we've been having, Doug, on a little bit of chatter on Messenger suggested pinhole is you're not a regular pinholer. So where does pinholing fit into your photography world?
Yeah, Andrew. I mean, I absolutely love pinhole photography. I find myself as a full-time worker, I don't necessarily have the time that I would love to devote to my photography. So hours are slim. I probably find myself more as a camera collector and user of different cameras than I would be of just one format or one type. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll pinhole for a few weeks a year and then I'll move on to large format or just now got into dry plate photography. So it's something I'm trying out and I've actually got some 4x5 plates I'm actually going to try to pinhole with and test my luck with that.
Yeah, I've done, I was just getting my dry plate holder out yesterday and I was trying to force it into the back of my wooden Italian bomb camera. And I'd forgotten that it was quite a tight fit. And last time I used it, I thought I really should get some sandpaper and just make it a bit better fit in the camera. So I was forcing it into the back of the camera and the ground glass sprang off and landed on the floor and shattered.
Oh, so,
there's a guy in Lithuania. Yeah, not next door. In Lithuania, he's on eBay. I've mentioned him before, maybe on this show, I'm not sure. And he's, I think it goes by the name of Vigis, V-I-G-I-S, I think it is. And he makes some super nice ground glass. And I got it shipped to the UK for 21 of the sterling pounds. So, you know, that's not too bad. Someone said, you should just make your own. I said, yeah, but, you know, he makes really good ones. And for 21 smackaroos, can't go wrong, really. So I've used it in pinhole as well. What pinhole camera are you going to use for your dry plate? Not that it really matters.
4x5 image that I use for that.
Okay, is that with any of the extensions or just as it comes?
Yeah, I do use the three extensions, which I guess they estimate out to be 75mm.
Yeah. Give it plenty of light, you know. You're probably blessed with a little bit more sunlight in Virginia, which is where you are,
yes, sir,
than in Cambridgeshire. So give it plenty of light, and you know, there's some. Is it the Jason Lane plates or the Zebra or Zebra, as you guys would say, plates? Which ones are you using?
The ones I've bought are the Jason Lane, and I went with the Speed plates, which I think are ASA 25.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So I've used those in the smaller format in the back of my Rolleiflex, because you know with. You can take the door off the Rolleiflex and replace it with another door which has a plate holder on the back. I don't know if you knew that or not, but being a camera collector.
Rolleiflex is one that I'm not overly familiar with, but right. Sounds like a good way to go about it.
Well, you have to wonder why. It seems a lot of effort to, you know, to produce a single image in a Rolleiflex, but anyway, it's novelty factor really. But I think 4x5 is much better way to go. So I've got 4x5 dry plates. Mine are the ISO 2 ones. So, you know, you have to wait around a week and a half normally for an exposure around here.
Do you notice any image quality difference in those, Andrew?
I can't say I've scientifically studied. I've only done a few of each really, and I haven't really compared and contrasted enough, you know, mainly because the weather's never really good enough. And when it is good enough, I'm doing something else. So, I've not shot enough really to comment. I think there's quite a lot of info, isn't there, on Jason Lane sites about the relative merits of the two types. And I forget what they are. Obviously, one's faster, but I think the slower one's supposed to mimic more the oldie worldy look of the stuff from the 1800s.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, well, I don't know anything really. All I know is I use the really slow stuff. And I was rating it at less than ISO one, in the middle of summer, and then I gave it about four times the indicated exposure to get good shadow detail, because I was just out in the garden, you know, and I did one rating at half the speed, I think, or maybe slightly, or maybe a ISO 0.8 or 0.5 or 1. Anyway, it was about half or a bit less than the box speed. And I did one where I guessed at the reciprocity and doubled. I gave it an extra two stops. And then I did another one with four stops. So, you know, if the exposure was 5 seconds, it became 10, 20, 40, pardon me, 80 seconds, something like that. And yeah, certainly the four-stop one gave decent shadow, you know. So that's probably what I'll go by. But, you know, the thing about those plates is Jason gives that graph, doesn't he? So you can look at it. And if you're in the northern hemisphere at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you rate it at a certain speed. Have you seen those graphs?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of thought that has to go into using these.
So. Well, yeah, I just throw a load of light at it is my experience. So, you know, good luck with it, really. It's a bit of a novelty, isn't it? Which, have you got the Chromagraphica plate holder as well? Did you get that?
No, actually, I'm using an old plate holder from the early 1900s that I had here.
Oh, excellent.
It seems to be doing okay. I've used it a couple of times in a speed graphic and...
Mm-hmm.
Appears to be light tight enough to be working on those, so I'll keep using that.
Yeah. Oh well, good luck. So, have you actually used any of the glass plates in anger yet, or are you just thinking about it?
I've used a couple of them, just kind of a test shot to see how they are, but I haven't pinholed with them yet.
No. It's lovely, isn't it, to use these. You know, that someone's gone to the effort to recreate something that was available, you know, 100 plus years ago. And I think it's awesome, you know. And of course, you get those because it's orthochromatic, you get the reds will appear very dark and blues will appear a bit light. And so you get weird effects going on in the eyes. And if you do a portrait of a guy with, you know, freckles, or a lady with freckles, I guess, depends how flattering you want it to be. And you know, the red shows up quite a lot, doesn't it?
It's a fun thing to mess around with, and
mm-hmm. So how long have you had the zero pinhole camera, Doug?
I've had that for 15 plus years.
Yeah.
I did a fair amount of pinhole photography back 2006, 7, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And I kind of laid it down and went to the dirty word digital. Didn't really enjoy that too much and kind of lay dormant for a while. And I finally got back into film photography about 3 years ago.
Oh, so a fairly recent reconvert then. Had you many people who fell victim of the digital craze sold all their film cameras and then discovered that in order to be a true hipster, you needed to be back into film photography. Then they had to go and spend, sell a kidney in order to buy all their film gear back again. Did you keep yours, or did you sell it all?
I kept it. I have quite a collection of old cameras, so.
Do you? What sort of what? How big is your collection? Then give us some highlights.
Oh wow. Sheer numbers, probably 300 to 400 cameras.
Whoa.
Pretty much you name it, I've probably got it or something close to. One of my current projects I'm working on is an old 1890s Rochester optical 5x8 wet plate camera. And be interesting to see. I think I'm going to see if Jason can get me some plates in that size and work with a format like that. A lot of the old 4x5, 8x10, old wooden cameras from back 1900s. And I come all the way up 35 millimeter, medium format, large format.
So, would you consider yourself a first and foremost a camera collector because of the beauty of these things, and the camera user secondary, or what?
That's a great question. I would say that's probably a fine line. My goal is to use everything that I get. I just finished up a project at the end of last year where I went 52 weeks shooting 52 different cameras,
Yep.
a roll of film a week through a different camera. So, yeah, I would say I probably try to be more of a user than a collector.
Well, anyone who's heard me ramble on about my small collection of cameras, which is not that many by a long chalk, and how anxious I become, just trying to choose what to use. I went so far as to post a couple of weeks ago, probably in Facebook or on Twitter, that I was considering selling all my lensed cameras, which aren't that many, half a dozen or so, and just concentrating on pinhole just to help focus creativity. And I'm not really sure how serious I was. I was really after a bit of a discussion about it, So most people end up saying, look, don't sell them because you won't be able to afford to buy them all back again, which I kind of knew. But just put them away. Don't stress over it. Put them aside. And if you want to concentrate on pinhole photography for the year, well, just do that. Don't feel under any pressure. Do you feel under any pressure? I mean, I guess if you did a 52 camera project, you must have felt under some pressure that these babies have got to have some love.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel a ton of pressure about it. And your thoughts about, selling and, reducing that down to three, four, whatever the magic number is something that ponders my mind often.
What about if you had to just sell everything and keep one for whatever circumstance? Okay, I'll let you keep one pinhole camera and one lensed camera.
Oh wow. I would probably keep a Nikon F2.
Oh, yes, yeah, good.
I would probably go with a Zero Image 2000, the 6x6 version.
They're not bad choices. Not so no large format then. You'd keep the you'd keep a 35 mil and a medium format. I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think I would use it more.
Yeah.
Setting up large format and all that goes along with that is so much more time consuming. So if I were going to keep one, I would probably keep something that was the most versatile.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a couple of shows back. We had Steve Gosling on, and Steve was the author of Lensless Landscapes. And of course, he made that book back in the 90s. Was it the 90s? I guess it was. Just using his Zero image. And he was one of my great inspirations for using my Zero image more. But it's broken at the moment. The pinholes fell out.
Oh, no.
So I've got to replace the pinhole. Which, for that focal length of 25 millimeter, has got to be either, well, if you work it out correctly, it's somewhere between 0.5 and 0.2, bang in the middle. So I was speaking to James Gurin from Reality So Subtle, and he said, well, probably, he said, if it was me, I'd go for the 0.15. So I'm going to buy a decent pinhole, not just make one. I thought, well, what's the point of having the Zero image camera with a homemade pinhole in? But yeah, so good choices. I think I have an F2. It's the only SLR, 35 millimeter SLR I've got. They are beauts, aren't they?
I certainly love mine.
There's a guy in, this has nothing to do with pinhole, isn't it? But you know, we haven't got Corey here, so we can talk about what we want. There's a guy in the UK, at least, yeah, I'm sure he's in the UK, called, I'm going to butcher his name, Sova Wong, S-O-V-E-R. Yes. Yeah, he is in the UK. Yeah,
he's the Nikon F2 guru of all types as far as repairs and knowledge, for sure.
Well, I bought my F2 after watching that film Blow Up. Have you seen that? So that's a 1960s British film set in London about a fashion photographer. I think it's kind of based on David Bailey. So he's a bit of a playboy, and he was using a Nikon or Nikon, however you want to say it, a Nikon F. And it was the whole iconic, you know, setting in London in the 60s and the way he was using the camera. And he photographed in this park. He just went off to take some pictures in this park. And when he developed the film and blew it up, he saw a dead body. And so it was all about this mystery around this dead body. But I thought, and I'd convinced myself to get out of 35 millimeter at that point. And I'd sold my OM gear, which I kind of regretted. And I thought, oh, maybe I should buy a Nikon F. anyway, so I did a bit of poking around and research and things, and ended up buying a pretty, pretty minty looking F2, which is its serial numbers on Sova's website as one that's been serviced.
Oh, great!
Him, so it's been through his hands, and I don't think it had seen much much use. But I certainly wouldn't sell that, even though I don't shoot much 35 millimeter.
Yeah, that would be one to hang on to for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, photography has always been a pastime. Is the day job non-photographic?
The day job is definitely non-photographic. yeah, I mean, photography. My dad loved cameras back as a child. I remember him going through all sorts of different cameras and buying new ones. And you know, as a child, you're always the posing guy standing in the field with flowers for dad that you hated as a kid. But yeah, I guess I got my love of cameras from him and his passion for it. So he had a dark room down in his basement, and you know, we messed around a lot with that. And it was always a good time, a good memory, and it usually takes me back to that as, you know, thinking of the times we spent doing that. So that connection never left.
Yeah, I've never managed. I've had darkroom since I was, you know, in my late teens, but I've got two grown-up children, and I've never convinced either of them to spend any time in the dark room. I think they just saw it as, at the time, it was too small and smelly.
Yeah, I've got two adult kids too, and I don't think they would hang out in the dark room with me either. So.
No. But I do have folks come in now, other people that come in for day workshops and things. So I am getting to share the lifelong passion of the dark room. So you have a dark room now as well, Doug, do you? Or is that...
Currently, I don't. I wish I did, and I'm looking. Matter of fact, I've got my eye on an enlarger right now. Got a perfect spot to put one. I just haven't quite got it together yet.
Mm-hmm. Were you watching something on the eBay?
No, actually, there's a local antique store that has kind of debating whether I want to jump in or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a if you look on Facebook Marketplace, there's often stuff going on there as well, isn't there? I don't know, and you guys have Craigslist, which seems quite popular as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's no shortage to find them around here. So I think commitment's probably more of me building the room and getting everything together to make it happen.
Yeah. Have you got a space in mind then?
Yeah. I've got plenty of space for it. Take a little bit of work, put it together.
Yeah.
I think my biggest fear, Andrew, is how much time I'm going to spend down there and the trade-off of making darkroom prints compared to the time I could be out actually shooting.
Oh, well, that's a discussion all in itself, and one I've touched on over the last few months. It was one of the things I was going to talk to you about. Really, we haven't even got on to talk about Holger Week, have we yet? But so I came to the decision, I think, throughout last year that I was going to, shall we say, shoot less and print more. Yeah. And occasionally I put that little hashtag out there. No one has got cross with me for doing that. I'm not saying you shouldn't go out there and take loads of pictures or make loads of photographs, whichever you want to do, because I enjoy that too. You know, what's better than being out with one of these beautiful old mechanical cameras, large format pinhole, and spending time out in the countryside or in the city, what, you know, because that's just as exciting and creating images. But I was finding myself getting pretty stressed with the amount of negatives that were building up. And I hate scanning. So I try to moderate my time creating more images and concentrating more on the printmaking. And that's kind of working at the moment. Do you find you ever have those, you know, we've talked about the camera owning, using trade-off, but you know, do you enjoy the bit of the process at the front end, you know, the being out there with the cameras, and then the developing and maybe printing would be less or so? What bit do you enjoy most?
I mean, I certainly love getting out.
Yeah.
You know, it's the great escape for me to take a hike and, you know, find something to shoot. But scanning and sitting in front of the computer, which is pretty much my day job, is sitting in an office. So that part is monotonous, and I don't do a very good job of it.
No, me neither. That's why you need a darkroom. So I'll make the decision for you. Okay. So even when you come to semi-retirement like me, you'll have plenty of time. Okay, not that I've got plenty of time. I should have plenty of time, but I don't find myself in there much still. But in theory, you've got plenty of time when you start easing back from that day job.
Yeah, I agree. I'm heading towards those latter years for retirement, starting to be in the discussion, and that's part of the thought of setting up the dark room is having more time to spend down there. And I agree 100%. The image is more important in the long run.
In the long run, but then I mentioned it in I think in the large format photography podcast Facebook group. I said, image making, that's where I've got to be this year. I've got far too many negatives, and it's stressing me out. And I think it was either Wayne Setzer or Greg Obst said, I enjoy being out there with the large format camera, and I'm carrying on making more and more negatives because there'll come a day when I'm so when I'm too old to go out with a camera. And I thought, oh yeah, maybe maybe I should be doing that.
It's a double-edged sword for sure. I mean, there's an argument for both sides.
There is, yeah, and I'm not at all saying carries any more value than the other. You've just got to work it out yourself. It's just that, you know, I can sit here and pontificate to people who care to listen to me on the podcast. In the limited time that you have with pinholing, say over the next year, are you going to be working on a specific sort of project, do you think, or will it just be grabbing the pinhole cameras and having it, you know, just making images that grab your attention at the time without really thinking too much about it? I'm not saying one's any better than the other, just curious. So projects or more spontaneity?
I love the projects. They kind of keep me focused, but currently I can't say that I've got any in my head that...
Oh, you could document your day at the office, couldn't you? You know, I mean...
That would be...
You could pinhole portraits of your colleagues. What would they think if you stuck your zero image on top of their on the desk and said, look, can I just leave this here for, you know, an hour?
I don't think anyone would think twice about it. Most of them know me pretty well there, but
there's a project for
I mean, there's all sorts of things like that I suppose I could do, but I guess at this point, until I get something focused, I'll probably be more of, you know, taking a hike with a camera and just seeing what I run into.
Well, that's a project in itself, isn't it? You know, that's a focus, taking your camera with you. How far are you hiking and what sort of cameras are you taking? Are you taking lensed cameras or pinhole cameras on those sort of trips?
I'll take anything. Living here in Southwest Virginia, we're in the mountains, kind of out in the country. So there's mountains and trails and rivers and streams all around. So there's no shortage of places to hike and go.
You're blessed, aren't you? America is such a huge, wonderful country. You know,
very, very blessed, very happy for the part of the country I live in, for sure. It's absolutely beautiful.
Folks, listeners to the podcast will know my love affair with the States, and we're planning on going back in a few years' time and spending. Well, I want to go for 3 months, but Julie. 3 months, he says. Can we really 3 months? You know, that's like half a lifetime. So I said, okay, well, minimum of 6 weeks. But you know, I'm sure if we plan it properly, we could bum around America for 3 months. You know, staying with people like you.
you're more than welcome.
There you go. I'll add you to my list. That's about 12 people I've got now. I said to Julie, it'll be a cheap. We can go for weeks on end, and I know loads of people, and you know, as long as we don't overstay our welcome, you know, stay with folks for a couple of nights, and you know, hire a RV or you know, and do some traveling around, do a bit of train travel, you know, stay in some dodgy motels. Wonderful time we can have. Anyway, I'm not sure I'm selling it properly to her. I need to refocus my arguments, I think. But anyway, so we'll be back. We'll be back to the States. Not been to Virginia, so that might be... we've been to Georgia and been to New York and Utah, California, Arizona, and where else? Ooh, New England, those sort of places. We'll see.
You made your rounds then.
Yeah, a little bit. But I can understand why, you know, vast majority, I don't have any facts for this really. The majority of Americans probably don't go anywhere, because why would they? You know, in your country, you can, if you want to go skiing and then have a holiday in the sun, you could probably do that in one venue, couldn't you? Pretty much, you know.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know if most Americans really appreciate what's all around them. You know, the grass always looks greener on the other side. But
It does, doesn't it? But I think most people realize it. It probably isn't. Do pinhole photography? Does that help you appreciate your own backyard a little bit more?
Yes, absolutely.
When I say your backyard, I don't necessarily mean literally your backyard, but you know the where you live.
With a pinhole camera, you can stay in your backyard. I mean, there's so much. The point of view is so different, and that's what I really like about it, is you can concentrate on smaller things that you normally wouldn't think about photographing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's just spend a bit of time, because I got you on because you were our grand winner in the Holger Week pinhole section. There was a couple of highly commended that we'll get those guys on at some point soon. But you submitted three images, a color one and two black and whites, and the one that just kind of had to leap out at us, really. Although I like the graveyard one, actually, to be honest. That's kind of ghostly, isn't it? And you know, who's the model in the graveyard? You got this shot with your Holger 120 WPC, and there's a ghostly figure walking towards you.
The ghostly figure is my lovely bride. She it was actually a double exposure.
Mm-hmm. Is she meant to be in two? She's in two places. Is she there?
Yeah, she was walking across. I took the photo in the graveyard, and then we came back that evening, and I had her walk through the backyard.
Oh, I see. I just assumed it was just, you know, you got her walking through the frame as you were exposing it.
So, yeah, we double exposed that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't quite what I was looking for, but it wasn't bad either.
No, but you certainly knocked the ball out of the park, as they might say, with family reunion. Tell us about family reunion. Describe it to us and tell us how that image came to be made.
I'll give you a good story on that one. My wife runs an antique store. Okay. So our weekends are usually going to estate sales, garage sales, tag sales, auctions. Of course, she will pick up items for her store. And of course, I'll be digging around looking for old cameras and things that make me happy. We went to a sale, and it's a beautiful home, big, huge home. And the upstairs was all elaborate. And then you go downstairs, and the lady was a professional doll maker. And it was like a graveyard of doll heads, arms. It was just crazy. And it was all dark and weird down there. I come up from the basement, and I've got all these boxes. And, you know, my wife's like, what have you got there? And I'm like, I've got all these baby doll heads.
Of course. Well, yeah. So what are you asking a stupid question like that for? What else would I be carrying?
And I mean, literally, there's like, I probably picked up 130, 150 baby doll heads. And she goes, what on earth are you going to do with those? I don't know, but I want them.
Oh, so did she give them to you, or did you have to hand over some money for them?
I had to purchase them, but I mean, it was, you know, $30 or something along that line. It was.
So were these discarded ones she didn't want, or
the lady had passed away? She was a doll maker, and you know, her time.
Oh, okay. So she, right? Okay, so she'd died, and this was what was.
These were parts of dolls that never got made
on the estate sale. Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah. So I finally had to find a use for them, and I went in the backyard and I set those up nicely in a nice little pattern, and my neighbors looked at me like I was absolutely crazy, and pulled out the pinhole camera and made a few shots, and there we go.
I don't know, really. It's just... It's a very striking image. We spoke about it a bit of length when we reviewed, you know, the winners and runners up and whatnot. And the ones with no eyes in at all are super scary, I think. You know what you should have done? The only thing that I would have, you know what I'd have done? I'd have gone and got an earthworm And I'd have put that one at the bottom. There's this, well, they're all bald. Well, they're not all bald. There's a few with hair. But the guy at the bottom there with the black eyes, you know, the eye sockets, with his nose just poking over the bottom of the frame. A worm, a single worm coming out of that left eye socket. That's what you needed.
I like the way you think.
Are you going to do more with the doll heads? Because there's a whole series here, isn't there? You could have individual portraits with worms coming out of their eyes.
Yeah, I'm not done with them by any means. No.
Well, if you've got that many doll's heads, there's got to be more than one image in this, you know, in this theme, hasn't there?
There's more to come. I just haven't imagined it yet, but I know there's more left in them.
You could do some interesting things with a large format camera, couldn't you, with some shallow depth of field and manipulating the focus plane. There's all sorts of crazy things you can do.
That's a great thought.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So well done. Well done for that. Was there a prize? I've no idea. Did you win something?
Actually, Mr. Holga and Todd Puckett, they do a really good job with the Holga Week thing. And there was some nice prizes sent out. I think I got a 5-pack of Ilford film.
Mm-hmm.
CineSteel threw in some film as well.
Yeah.
Along with some other goodies. Those guys certainly ponied up, and nice to get free film anytime, right?
Yeah, certainly. I know Ilford have just, as we speak now, it's the 6th of March, and in about a week's time, Ilford have announced another price increase from, I think, ranging between 3% for some of the Delta films and 7% on HP5, I think. And fiber paper is going to be another 7%, I think, something like that. But I'm not surprised. I think, you know, it's the way of the world, isn't it, with supply chain problems, the cost of raw materials. I'm surprised some of these price increases aren't higher.
Yeah, my day job is selling electrical supplies. And
is it? Yeah.
The raw material and material shortage and transportation and all that. It's real. It's none of us want to pay those higher prices, but from the manufacturing side, it's certainly out there and certainly not ready to stop anytime soon.
No, there's been a perfect storm, hasn't there, of events. And it's, you know, with Putin doing what he's doing now in Europe, it's just going to get worse. I mean, Russia is, they describe it as the breadbasket of Europe, you know, so the amount of wheat and barley and stuff that they produce, you know, it's not just oil and whatnot, it's, you know, it's the sheer volume of stuff they produce. So I think we're in for a rough old ride for a while.
I think it could get really bad really quick. Hopefully they'll find a peaceful solution to that sooner than later.
Yeah. We were watching a film last night called The Courier on Prime Video, and it was about time in the 60s, Khrushchev. Oh, I can't pronounce his name anyway, the president of Russia back then. And it was leading up to the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we were watching it thinking, oh, this is far too close to home.
Yeah.
There's a Russian leader who was some kind of idiotic despot. You know, really? Goodness me. Anyway, so photography, at least photography can be a bit of a diversion, can't it?
Certainly what I use it for.
Yeah. We have 5 members in the Lenses podcast Facebook group from Ukraine, and one of them spoke up earlier in the week when I said, look, we've got 5 members and, you know, we just hope you're all safe and doing well. And at least one of them I know is visible and seen the post. So, you know, if you Wherever you are in Europe, if you're close to Ukraine or you're on the border or you're in one of those other countries like Poland, we just send you all our love and best wishes, really, and hope that you stay safe and that, I'll use the word evil because, crikey, that's what it is, that it's stopped in its tracks, really. We don't normally talk about politics or religion on the Lenses podcast, but it's hard to ignore, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But you've got your pinhole and your camera collection, so you can go and into your room and stroke all your cameras and plan the dark room. That's what you need to do.
We'll certainly work on that for sure.
So will you get will you do you think you'll aim to get an enlarger which will take you up to 4x5?
Yeah, I would love to, but there again, size becomes a factor with that. The area I have would probably be better suited for a smaller enlarger, but I would really like a 4x5 enlarger.
Yeah, you think they're big until you get them in your dark room, and then after a while, they don't seem so big.
They're also harder to find, so.
I know. A friend of mine has got a 8x10, and that's a huge, huge beast, you know? Goodness me.
That would be awesome. I would like to have that.
Anyway, the rising cost of film and paper will make us all, well, like all the other costs that are going up, if energy bills going up, food prices are going up, we're all having to make think about how we spend our money. And I think, spend wisely, choose wisely. I think it'll probably, if folks have got lots of cash free still, they'll keep buying film. I'll buy it when I can afford it, but I'll certainly be more selective moving forward with
Yes.
what I'm using.
Certainly slows my process down on, how much film I'm going to burn through when you think about that every shot you make.
I didn't used to, really, not so much, because film has always been part of my life, really, since a teenager, and I never abandoned the faith to the digital dark side. So it's just always been there, and it's always been a passion. So I've always just paid what it was, and I will still doing. I'll still do that, but less income now. So and as it keeps creeping up and creeping up, I've just bought some more color film because I've got into color photography. You did you do a bit of color? Your pinhole work there with some Kodak Portra 160 on the on the lakeside there in Virginia, calm waters.
I prefer black and white. I probably dabble in color 20, 25% of the time.
Yeah, that's probably my ratio as well. But now I've started printing in color. Is that something that you might consider doing? Printing in color is a game changer for me. It's made me want to use more color film.
I have not done that. It sounds like an exciting adventure there.
It really is, and it's not that difficult, really. And once you get your head around the color casts, your pinhole picture of calm waters is almost monochromatic, though, isn't it? It's not really color.
Yeah, the colors came out very interesting on that. I love the look of that photo.
Yeah, well, I think Portra 160 is suited for that, the calm, more muted muted colors, isn't it? It's possibly not a great film for me to use in the UK if I want to make prints, because you can't control the contrast. Well, I'm going to say you can't control the contrast at all, but there are probably ways of doing it. But it's not easy. You don't change your contrast filter and get a harder contrast. So you're really, with color printmaking, you're really driven by the lighting and the film choice. So, folks don't tend to shoot, if you're scanning, and particularly if you're in bright, sunny countries, people maybe shy away from the like of Ektar, which can be super bright and punchy, and maybe that's not the look that folks are looking for, but I'm going to start building up my Ektar stocks, Doug, for color printing, because we don't get such brilliant days here, and I figure, well, that film has got quite a lot of inherent punch to it. So hopefully that'll translate well into prints. But who knows?
I think you're probably onto something in that with the brighter colors of the Ektar. And
yeah. I was super happy with some Portra 160 and 400 negatives that I've been printing recently, which were from the States, you know, from California and Arizona and places in August and July, you know, so it was pretty, you know, punchy colors, and they came through pretty well with both Portras, really, you know. But for here, I think the Ektar's got to be the way forward. Have you tried Ektar in pinhole cameras?
I have not. I would say pinholing, I'm probably more black and white.
You should give Ektar a go. It really jumps out at you with in pinhole. Yeah, it's really good. Are you developing at home as well?
Yes, sir. I do most, I'd say 95% of my developing here at home. Occasionally, if I'm crunched for time, and I'll send something off to a lab. But I do most of it here.
And HP5, is it your favorite, or they just happen to be the two pictures you submitted to the competition?
Yeah, HP5 works for me. It's so versatile.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a good latitude of, you know, a stop or two in either direction, which with a pinhole camera, I find that to be invaluable to make sure you get decent images out of it.
Although in the middle of summer, you're down to pretty short exposure times, I guess, aren't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially with HP5, bright sunny days, a lot of times I'll drop down to FP4 just to, be able to calculate the time.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to see you're... Say again, sorry?
You know, with the manual shutter, if you're less than a second, it's kind of hard to get your exposure time right.
Yeah. I used the exposure guide from Zero Image for years, you know, just opening and just... If it's a second, make it 2 seconds. If it's 4 seconds, make it 10 seconds or something. And I think you can follow that sort of regime with HP5 and you'll get great results pretty much every time. You don't really need to overthink it.
It certainly makes it easier, that's for sure.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite developer? Corey always likes to ask these questions so he can go and copy people's techniques.
I'm an old school guy. I still use D76.
There you go. Yeah, me too. Well, ID11, but it's much the same, isn't it? Yeah. So ID11, D76. Yeah. So you can't go far wrong. Okay. Well, let's. If you'll listeners humor me for 10 minutes, Doug. Do you spend much time browsing the Lensless Podcast Facebook group?
Oh, yes, I've been on there several times.
I've been looking. I've got it open at the moment, and I wanted to give a shout out to a few people because, it's a great accompaniment to the show. And there's been some, quite a lot of new folks come in just recently, and there's a few that have struck me as posting some interesting work, and one of them is Vincent Sebastian. So I don't know where you are, Vincent. You've got an interesting sort of picture of looks like a highwayman with a red mask on, and you seem to have converted. I don't know if this is your sole pinhole camera, but Vincent has converted a 1950s Agfa Isola. Is that how you pronounce it? Isola Isola pinhole. Yeah. So he's taken an Agfa Isola, which I think's, you'll know, Doug, is that one with a trap door and bellows that comes out, or is it a fixed? Is it a fixed body camera? Do you know?
If I'm correct on that one, that is a flipped out bellows type.
Is it? Well, there we go. And I know lots of folks have used these to make pinhole cameras. So he was using Delta 100, which is beautiful, and he's been. Yeah, so there's a picture he just posted a few hours ago from the last trip to El Tiradito. So that sounds like it might be in Mexico. doll and wishing candles. So this is right up your street, Doug. You should check this out. There's a doll lying there, which looks like a dead body.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. And I love the tonality in the image. I don't know. I guess it's a scan and not a print, but it's really well done. He seems to be working on a bit of a series, because yesterday he shared one again, Delta 100, same from a trip to El Tiradito. This one's called Offering, so it's some kind of shrine, isn't it? Photograph small ceramic of Virgin Mary, painted heart on rocks, which is just lovely. Again, I think it's just that it was the tonality of the images, and then another shrine, a few shrines. And then a bit further on, back in January, he said, Agfa Isola converted strip of three. Yeah, so he did a triptych, strip of three negatives of different camera positions of a roadside memorial. So he's got this theme going, hasn't he, of memorials and shrines. Cruces del Camino, with a self-adhesive stick on letters writing plastic flowers. That's the thing, isn't it? These shrines can be at the one time really profound, but at the other time quite tacky. And he's got, so I've just clicked on his name in the group, and Facebook does this thing where it's brought up six recent photos in a grid pattern. And he's got a remarkable consistency of exposure and tonality. And the images are just great. There's one of American flags fluttering in a line with a cross at the end.
Yes. That's a really nice image.
Yeah. And there's a couple of that shot. There's another, a different image, a different angle, with a wreath with the sun coming down through it. So there's a couple with the flags. Great work, Vincent. Maybe we'll have to at some point get you on. I love this idea. Well, see, this is a great project, isn't it? Vincent's obviously hit upon something here, and the use of light as well. This is, wow. Vincent, I take my hat off to you. I love the fact that you've got a little project. It appears to be a project, although I'm going back now and there's some pictures of trees and rivers. I like the shrines. The shrines are just awesome. So folks who browse through the Lenses Podcast Facebook group, check out Vincent's work. Yeah, the more I look at it, there's definitely a feeling of shrines and memorials and places that people go to remember. So it's very inspiring. I'd like to do a lensless project this year and a lensed project. I know what I'm going to do for the lensed project, but I don't really know what I'm going to do for the lensless project. It's probably just going to be something like capturing the spirit of the Fenlands where I live. So lots of moody reeds blowing in the grass, in the wind, and that sort of thing. But as we don't have any shrines like this around, but this is awesome. Does this capture your imagination, Doug? These shrine pictures?
Absolutely. I'm all about graveyards and obviously the baby doll in there with the shrine.
Yeah.
I think he's done a great work here.
Well, particularly some of the graveyards you come across in different parts of the States, or particularly for, I guess it's a sort of Catholic graveyards where there's often lots of other icons and imagery around, and it just adds something to the scene if you're photographing it,
Yeah. Yeah. You catch a nice foggy morning, get out to a spot like that. It's, I can spend a lot of time doing that.
Graveyards are very peaceful things. There's I'm a little bit curiously obsessed with a couple on YouTube, and they run a site called the Grim Life Collective, which is they're basically horror fans, And I'm not much of a horror fan, but they do a lot of graveyard visits for famous people, really, and they're very respectful. And I just like watching them wander around. I was in Julie and I were in Atlanta in 2017, and they've got a cemetery, historic Oakland Cemetery in just on the outskirts of Atlanta. I don't know if you know Atlanta at all, Doug. Is that a cemetery you've ever been to, Oakland Cemetery?
I have not been to that. I've been to Atlanta several times, but I've not been to that.
You should, if you go again, it's just a small metro ride away. Not far. It's only about a couple of kilometers outside the city center, and it's supposed to be one of the most haunted graveyards, which I only found out recently when I started looking on YouTube. But anyway, it's got lots of shrines and big mausoleum type things. Wonderful place for exploring with a pinhole camera. So Vincent, you'd don't know where you are, my friend, but you'd love it there. So well done for sharing. And if you're posting still listeners into the Flickr group, well done for that as well. I did take a quick look earlier. I don't spend as much time on Flickr as I should do, but please, listeners, keep posting into Flickr. Keep sharing your awesome work into the Facebook group, just like Vincent does, because he's spectacular work. Sorry, I'm just flicking back through now to see if there's anyone else we can highlight. Well, there are. There's just loads of different people. People who are really active. Oh, there's, I was going to say there's yours, but that's I posted that. So you're okay. Yeah, Vincent's kind of taken over. I see friend of the show, John Farnham, has been messing around with his newfound love of 3D printing, and he's made himself a shutter for some kind of folding camera that he's turned into a pinhole. So, John, I hope to see some cracking results with that. And yeah, there's just some great stuff going on. There's another newish member, I think. When did he join? Yeah, I can't pronounce his name though. I sent him a friend request. So, Algimantus Terlikus. So, Algimantus, I've no idea where you are, but you did a photo paper self-portrait, I think, of yourself. Well, if it's a self-portrait, that is of yourself, isn't it? Like that, like what you're doing. And yeah, some military range, so they're messing around with paper and pinhole cameras. There's one, folks listening, if you go to March the 3rd, which is only a few days ago, and this, I really love it. So it's very soft portrait right into the sun, and it's a distorted self-portrait called Memories of a Snowy Winter, and it's a pinhole camera made in a tin can. That's why it's so distorted, with photo paper. So Algimantus, you're clearly a proper homemade pinhole cameraman, and good stuff. Have you made any pinhole cameras, Doug?
I've had a couple of attempts, Andrew. I can't say that mine were very successful.
No, mine have been hit and miss too, but it's been kind of fun making them. But yeah, if you don't get any kind of result out of it, it's I consider it a waste of time. But yeah, so Algimatus, you're I hope I'm not just butchering your name, Algimantus. You're doing really well. There's another one from February the 22nd, and you say there is no doubt that the world is made up of strings. So this is pinhole, 1 pint beer can and photo paper. So again, another self-portrait of you in a raincoat. That's all very sinister. And you're standing next to some kind of railing or one of those shutters that you pull down, and it's just super distorted. And the sun is shining through it, and the pattern is shining over you and the ground. So it's a very creative use of a homemade pinhole camera. So I like what you're doing as well. And I just found another one, Waiting at the Fountain. That's a cracking one. Looks like an amalgamation of different images. Yeah, so there we are. Two excellent recommendations. We're probably going to leave it there. Doug, have you been it's been a real pleasure chatting to you, and you letting me ramble on as well, which is lovely.
I certainly enjoyed being a guest on here today, Andrew.
So Yeah, just get away from that laptop or that PC and get your darkroom built, my friend. That's what you need to do.
I appreciate that. I'll certainly get to work on it.
And share a bit more. I know you said you're not much of a sharer, but
I'm not, but I'm going to try to do better on that and see if I can't get my plate images up on here for you.
Yeah, well, you can share some pictures of cameras as well. You can post some large format ones into the large format group if you want to, or if it's pinhole related into here. Doug, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much, and well done again for winning, for pushing Rene Vonk off his pedestal.
Thank you so much.
You're a worthy successor. Rene has got to up his game now to regain his throne next year. So take care, my friend, and folks listening, we'll see you again whenever I can get a guest on. Bye now. Say bye, Doug.
Goodbye.
Cheers.